with Eric Berger. His new book is Liftoff, Elon Musk and the Desperate Early Days That Launched SpaceX. The word desperate is applicable here because we're looking at a privately funded company by a man who has an idea while driving on the Long Island Expressway. Let this be a lesson to the future. If you're on the Long Island Expressway and you think, why not go to Mars? It might require your whole fortune and most of your life to devote yourself to that concept. But that's exactly the way you tell the story, Aaron. Eric, is that the way Musk tells the story on the Long Island Expressway?
I think he thought he would go faster than he did. It's been 20 years, more than 20 years since he had that idea in 2001. But yeah, I mean, that's how he tells the story. He's like, I was just thinking about what I was going to do next. You know, he'd kind of ended his relationship with PayPal. And he was sitting on a few $100 million, and he was a young guy, you know, about 30 years old and bright, obviously, and ambitious, and was trying to figure out what he was going to do next. And he looked around and thought that the space industry was ripe for disruption.
The disruption, though, required Elon Musk to educate himself. So sometimes I think he's sitting in his cubicle reading fundamental books about being an astrophysicist or a mechanical engineer, an electronics engineer. Is he a quick study? Does he talk about being a quick study?
Yeah, and other people around him say that as well. Like it's not unheard of for people to come into the space industry and really immerse themselves. They read fundamental books like Ignition and other things like that to get a fundamentals of rocket science and try to pick it up. Because one of the interesting things about building rockets is that you learn by doing rather than reading about it. And so, you know, you can jump in and get a pretty good education. So yeah, I mean, he's a quick study and he applied himself to learning everything he could about, you know, the fundamentals of rocketry and aerospace engineering.
He applied himself to donating or being a philanthropist for or supporting certain activities like Mars Oasis, the XPRIZE on Mars. Other ideas that were commonplace in the first part of the 21st century. However, in February of 2002 is my note here, and any winter of 2002 in California, he brings together experts to talk about founding a company. I think I hear amusement in the room. Is that right, Eric? Many people have tried and nobody'd succeeded at this point of being a private launch company.
Yeah, Musk had been reading books and he'd also been talking to a lot of people. And so he had money and he knew some people. And he sort of talked up Mike Griffin, who would eventually become NASA's administrator in the 2000s, a few years later. And so he gathered together a lot of the leading people in the space industry to kind of sound them out about his idea to start a rocket company. And a lot of the people in the room he wanted to try to hire. And this story was told to me by Chris Thompson, who would go on to become the vice president of structures at SpaceX. But he basically said that Elon had this meeting and he was laughed out of the room when he suggested that he was going to. This was in a hotel in Los Angeles.
Yes, he offered five jobs. Only two of them were taken up. You mentioned Mr. Thompson and we've mentioned Mr. Mueller. So Mueller's employee one, Thompson's employee two. It's May of 2002, is that right? Do I have
yes.
to say right? May of 2002. They name it the Space Exploration Technologies, which is a terrible name. So
yes.
Who comes up with SpaceX? Whose idea is that?
Right. So they were calling it SET along the way, and that is rather Space Exploration Technologies, and that is rather a cumbersome name. So at one point, Elon himself came up with the name SpaceX that summer sometime. And so they went from SET to SpaceX.
Again, this has the feel of Tom Swift Jr., the Hardy Boys. You know, let's build a rocket and go to the moon. They take residence in what I presume was an empty building in El Segundo, 13,000 square feet, put a bunch of desks in, some computers. Did they favor PCs or apples in those days? Do we know? Did they have Macs or PCs?
They had PCs, yeah.
PCs. And they start hiring. Koenigsmann is one of them. He becomes the chief engineer. But what's important now is this is a business. This isn't money one way. Musk is devoting, Eric's reporting, about half of his worldly fortune, which is sizable, about $100 million. And we learn later that Musk was thinking, free flights. I can afford free flights. I can pay for and inspire free flights. He has a very able assistant named Mary Beth Brown, who pays the bills and pretty much acts like Wendy for the boys. That's the way I picture this. It's Musk is Peter Pan, the Lost Boys. There are pirates, you know, sometimes we could call them the Air Force, sometimes we could call them NASA. And they're in this large facility. Do they have the equipment right away? Or are they making it up on computers? What are the first months like?
So the first months are initially designing the rocket and then figuring out what you're going to build. And so the two big differences here, I think what SpaceX was trying to do and what had typically come before is, number one, they didn't have a government contract to build this rocket. So no one was paying them their costs for all this design work. They were only going to get paid when they sold launch contracts primarily. So they wanted to get to launch as quickly as possible because that's when they could start getting return on all of the money they were spending. And the second thing was that, you know, they did not want to build a rocket by buying all the components from different suppliers. So typically, you know, if you wanted to build a rocket in the United States, you would buy your engine from Aerojet Rocketdyne, and you would buy your structures maybe from Boeing, and you'd buy your flight software from Draper, and, you know, all this. And what Musk wanted to try to do was build as much of that in-house. It's called, you know, vertical integration. It's a way to keep costs down and go faster because you're not waiting on suppliers for parts and things like that. The challenge, of course, is that you've actually got to build those things that are very specialized components. And so some of the early things they were doing in those months is they were trying to figure out, okay, what really can we build in-house and what should we outsource? And so they made the decision that they were going to build the Merlin engine, design it, and build it in-house. And that's what Tom Mueller did. And then they were going to, initially at least, they were going to buy things like tanks, fuel tanks, propellant tanks. They were going to go, you know, buy those. And so that's what they were doing kind of that fall and winter, is going around to suppliers to find out what they could need and when they could get it.
And then they discovered they needed a test site, and Los Angeles area wasn't going to do because they made big black smoky clouds that were very unfriendly to the neighborhood. So they wind up in McGregor, Texas. Was that an accident? Was it just serendipity?
It was kind of serendipity. I mean, they had looked around the country, and I think that was sort of down on their list. They happened to be speaking at Purdue University. Elon and Tim Buzz and Tom Mueller were there to talk to students, to try to hire students. And the director of the engineering lab, the aerospace lab there, had worked at McGregor for a company called Beale Aerospace. And he told them about McGregor and said they should check it out. So actually they took Elon's private jet directly from Indiana and Purdue down to McGregor, Texas to check out the site.
And that becomes the first of the many test sites for the Merlin engine and the Kestrel engine. The book is Eric Berger's Liftoff, Elon Musk and the Desperate Early Days That Launched SpaceX. We're going back to Omelek for Flight 2 in 2007. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.